Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Nonstop rain music for nonstop rain. Although it looks like it stops raining. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's out this week. He's back Tuesday. No show on Memorial Day. I'm on vacation next week, so my getaway hour. Ian Harditz joining me on the Wester Hotline. Ian Harditz of Matthew Berry's Fantasy Life. Ian, good morning. Thanks for taking some time today.
Good morning, man. Appreciate you having me. Where's vacation for you next week?
Actually, going to take a little trip to Boston, doing some golfing out that way, seeing some family. So, yeah, getting on the road and going to the Boston area for a bit.
Hey, I spent last weekend in Lexington on a golf trip of my own, so shoot low, man.
I'll do my best. Just went through the odyssey of getting fitted and get a new driver. So it's debuting on this trip, which, you know how that works, Ian. High hopes and results. Well, we'll see. It's like a fantasy draft. You know, you go in feeling great. You come out of it. Who knows? That's golf.
That's about how it goes. And NFL draft grades as well. You know, yeah, we'll find out the real story in about 3 years. But yeah. That's not going to stop us from getting excited right now.
That's right. Ian's doing NFL team previews. Saw your Bills preview, and you know, I'm going to go with good news, bad news, Ian, because you like the Bills to maybe win the Super Bowl, which we love, but we also love being underdogs, and so do the Bills love being underdogs, and here they are favored in every game this season as we hit May 23rd. Favored in every game and right back, you know, expected to go to the mountaintop or bust, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of these things where, again, if you just showed someone, you know, maybe they've been in a coma the last 5 years and you can't show them the Super Bowl champ, but you just show them all the statistics from this last half decade. I mean, how could the Bills not have won one by this point? But I know you guys know that all too well. But it is just wild to me that, again, they literally lead the NFL in points per game over the past 5 years while simultaneously allowing the fewest points per game on defense. So, again, I know they keep running into these buzzsaws in the form of the Chiefs in the playoffs, but we've seen them get the regular season wins. I think some of the roster additions, Josh Palmer, like, okay, they're not completely, you know, blowing you out of the water. They didn't give anyone $100 million or anything, but they added the route running maven. They got some extra depth on the defensive line. And again, they weren't that far away to begin with. So at some point, I do think number 17 is going to have what it takes. Again, we've seen it in stretches. So why not this year?
Yeah, I think Bills fans have a similar mindset. Like, eventually, they'll get it done with Josh. He's not yet 30. You know, in one way I like to frame it, sometimes we're talking about them fixing their defense. Sometimes it's about pieces on offense. And it's about the missing 4 points. Should they be aiming for 4 more or trying to keep the Chiefs from scoring 4 less, basically? And if we start with the offense, you know, you wrote up a preview about their fantasy outlook and Shakir, who came on last season. Kincaid and Coleman are both names that are high-profile guys that we're kind of waiting to see break out. Let's start with Coleman. We spent last hour talking a lot about him because while there are some things maybe missing in his game, there are lots of things that maybe the Bills can I guess, glow up and bring about more for him. I'm wondering if there's more schemed looks for him this season in year two.
Yeah, honestly, I was really surprised with how good he was after the catch. I mean, if anyone checked out his highlight film from Florida State, I mean, you saw all the contested catches, jumping over dudes, mossing them and all that. So, you know, seeing him do that same thing, that deep bomb against Detroit, you know, against the Jets in the end zone, did something similar. So that wasn't overly surprising. But, man, the way he's able to take that slant against the Titans for 60-plus yards, you know, really was showing out against the Seahawks. Just one of the more unfortunate injuries of the year because it did really seem like he was coming on week 7 and 8 before he had that injury against the Dolphins. But overall, anyway, you know, going back to yards after the catch point, Next Gen Stats has a cool little, you know, metric where they basically kind of judge how many yards after the catch was each player going to get per reception, how much they actually get, so you can have a nice plus minus. And Keon Coleman led all wide receivers in the NFL at this yards after the catch above expected metric last season, and just really good company when you look at the other wide receivers to do so since 2018. DJ Moore, A.J. Brown, Debo Samuel, Jalen Waddle. I mean, I understand Keon not necessarily playing like those guys, but the fact that he might have two trump cards in his, you know, toolkit in terms of that, again, mocking dude's ability and then also getting going after the catch. Hey, I'm not saying that he's going to be, you know, the next Diggs ripping off 1,100, 1,200 yards per year and everything. But, you know, there was a time where Gabe Davis could go out there and, you know, be this boom or bust, you know, touchdown-dependent guy. And I do think that, you know, Keon is a more talented version potentially of that. So, you know, my bold fantasy prediction, at least for the Bills this year, is that Keon will find his way into the end zone double-digit times.
Ian Harditz, Fantasy Life, joining us here on WGR Sports Radio 550 on our Wester Hotline. How about for Kincaid? He's the other kind of elusive thing for the Bills. I don't think anybody here, I shouldn't say that. Like he's kind of maybe fallen on a little bit of hard times after that drop against the Chiefs on the kind of Hail Mary from Josh Allen. But he's shown to have good hands. He got here right away and was all about how smooth things were. And then it became a bit of a mixed bag, a change in offensive coordinator, an offense trying to find its way. And when it did find its way, it was more in a everybody gets the ball kind of thing as opposed to exploit the tight end matchup nightmare that maybe he was sold to be. Where do you feel like Kincaid fits in with this offensive game plan?
It's one of these things where it usually takes tight ends a while to get going in the NFL. I mean, Brock Bowers and Sam Laporta in recent years have spoiled us a little bit, but it is the position where, you know, normally it's not surprising at all when it takes guys 3-4 years. And Kincaid, I mean, hey, guy still is only 25 years old himself, but when you already have first-round pick, when you're being called, you know, Josh Allen's new version of Travis Kelce, you know, they say comparison is a thief of joy for a reason. So I don't think Kincaid has been horrible by any stretch, but again, just such an ill-timed drop, obviously, in the playoffs, something that the Ravens fans and Mark Andrews certainly knows all about as well. And just looking back, I mean, just it was funny. I, you know, was kind of being a little bit mean on the old Twitter sphere. Not mean, but just annoying, I guess you could say, where I said, Dalton Kincaid career highlights. You know, it was just the one play against the Lions where he caught the ball and then pointed at the couple guys on the ground. I understand he caught a nice seam pass against the Patriots a couple years ago, but I feel like through 2 years, you have a first-round tight end, and it's just so hard to even come up with these big plays that he's even been able to make. So really has been more of a, you know, I would say just factor of what Josh Allen's been able to do. The fact he hasn't been able to separate from Dawson Knox hasn't been ideal, especially in fantasy land where we're more concerned about counting numbers and efficiency. But all that to say, there have been some underlying signs that, you know, better days could be ahead, specifically in terms of his ability to just earn a lot of targets when he is out there. Was actually the second best tight end last year in targets per route run, and also turned in top 10 marks in PFF receiving grade and yards per route run. So again, we don't have the huge counting numbers, but he also was playing through those shoulder and knee injuries. And I do think we, as a, you know, football fans, have a tendency where a guy's banged up, he's questionable on the injury report. Yeah, very tuned into it. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Once these guys do start playing through that pain, we kind of forget about it and maybe don't realize that, yes, they are, in fact, still operating at less than 100%. So, again, I think just expecting Kincaid, this time last year, we were hoping and thinking he'd be, like, the number one pass game option in this offense. Not so sure we're exactly going to get there, but, hey, if Kincaid, you're number three behind Shakur, and hopefully Keon takes his big next step, I still think that's a useful piece and a good passing game.
Ian Harditz of My Fantasy Life, online at fantasylife.com. Matthew Berry's Fantasy Life, sorry. Ian, let's talk dynasty drafts. You know, we've got our Bills chatter in. Are you feeling locked in on one is locked? Everybody knows Ashton G&T's number one.
Yeah.
2, 3, 4. Are you changing every day? Are you feeling like that is a safe spot? Is there a tier? Because you know, I feel like Travis Hunter is a conversation. I hear the Tet McMillan conversation and how good of a fit that is. Amarian Hampton and the Chargers. Like, where do you feel comfortable for a dynasty rookie draft? What numbers are you feeling comfortable to lock in, if anything, after one?
I think it is just one. And I mean, honestly, if you're in a super flex league where you can start multiple quarterbacks, I think Cam Ward comes into play at that number two pick as well. So you listed the main hitters. I would prioritize McMillan and Hunter, all things equal. Now, look, if you're on a squad where you already have a great wide receiver room, it's going to be even a struggle to get these guys in there. You're trying to win today. Then I think Hampton is someone where we can say, okay, we're going to get 4 or 5 years at a minimum inside this Jim Harbaugh, Greg Roman run first Chargers offense. That's tough to be too disappointed about. about. But just historically, we see wide receivers have a longer lifespan in the NFL overall, and then also as really high-end fantasy football assets. So, again, Jenty number one, easy. If I had just a pretty balanced team all the way around, I would lean toward Travis Hunter next, and then Tim McMillan, and then Hampton, because, man, while there might not be, you know, another running back like Jenty, who's a complete slam dunk, Hampton, next best thing with that first-round draft capital, good offense. I mean, you look at the Ohio State running backs and Henderson and Judkins, and even some of these guys going closer to round two, R.J. Harvey with the Broncos, Caleb Johnson with the Steelers, you know, hoping to be Arthur Smith's poor man version of Derrick Henry running that outside zone. I mean, there is a reason why, you know, we spent all April hearing from these draft analysts about how deep of a running back class this is. And accordingly, I do think there are some pretty quality options, you know, going into round two. But last point I would just make is, again, outside those top five picks, I've been surprised in some of my own personal drafts to see how far Colston Loveland and Tyler Warren have fallen, even in leagues that are tight end premium, where you're getting an extra half point every time your tight end catches the ball. So Colston Loveland in particular is someone where, yeah, maybe year one things start out a little slow. It is a crowded offense. Cole Kmet's making $50 million. He's going to be out there in a similar manner as kind of Dawson Knox doing stuff from Dalton Kincaid. But with Loveland and just everything he was able to do in a Michigan offense that really could barely throw a forward pass last season, I mean, really is an impressive player. Got that top 10 draft capital. And, hey, being attached to Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson for the next potential decade, he's someone who on my tight end needy squad I've actually traded up for and gone out of my way.
Who would you trust more for fantasy purposes? There's two teams here that jump out at me. You mentioned the Bears and Ben Johnson, Caleb Williams. Would you trust the Bears more or the Jags more? They make the change. They've got Trevor Lawrence and Brian Thomas and just mentioned Travis Hunter. Which of those two teams, Jags and Bears, that is supposed to probably bounce back offensively and maybe be a wagon if it all goes well, who would you trust more?
I'm going to lean towards the Bears, but it's a great question because these really are similar teams. They each got that OC wonder kid, Liam Cohen and Ben Johnson, coming to save the day for their quote-unquote generational quarterback who really has looked anything but during their short time in the NFL. But just with the Bears, okay, it was cool getting Luther Burden and everything. Colston Loveland has another dimension. But for them to beef up the offensive line the way they did is, you know, what gives me a bit more encouragement over the Jaguars, who I still do have that question mark there. Also, let's face it, Caleb Williams has spent a little bit less time being a bad NFL quarterback than Trevor Lawrence. So give me the Bears. You know, scary. This is their, what, third or fourth straight offseason championship banner they get to hang up over there. So I understand the expectations haven't gone great recently. But, again, enough things have gone right from the scheme, from the offensive line, to, again, even solidifying the pass catchers group that I do think we'll see Caleb Williams, you know, maybe not be a top five fantasy quarterback, but at least grace that top 10-12.
Ian Harditz on the Western Hotline. Ian, thanks again for the time, and, you know, enjoy Memorial Day weekend.
You too, man. Take care.
All right. Ian Harditz, you can find him at Fantasy Life, Matthew Berry's Fantasy Life. Great work. Find him on Twitter as well, at iHarditz. Love Ian's work. That 2-3-4 in dynasty rookie drafts, I have a league where I'm picking 2 and 3. I basically did a bunch of Brian Burke-style trades. Remember when Brian Burke traded up for the Sedins? I did all that to get up to 2 and 3 because you can't get to 1. So I won 2 in the lottery and then had 6 and moved to 4 and then moved to 3. And I think I moved up like 3 times. Anyway, I have 2 and 3. And Travis Hunter and Omarion Hampton, I think, are going to be the choices, but I don't know. Anyway. 803-0550. Had a lot of good calls and some thoughts on Keon Coleman there. If you want to jump in on that, you can. Appears to not be raining. I'm going to tell you guys a quick story here. Yesterday, I had to ride my bike in the rain, which, as it was happening, I thought, I saw another person on their bike riding by me in the rain, and they went jing, jing, like that, like a little high, like a Jeep thing. And I thought, that only happens because it's raining, and he knows. Like, anybody riding their bike in the rain, you know, maybe you have to do it to get to work or something, that's fine. I was just not, clearly not doing that. No rain gear, just, you know, I put on a jacket and I was riding my bike in the rain. I had to. If you're riding your bike in the rain, something has gone wrong for you.
Or you started riding your bike and then
it started raining. Well, that's gone wrong for you. You were hoping that didn't happen. Because it's not so much, it was a light rain at the time. It's not so much the rain. It's the wheel, your tire, firing water at your back the whole time if you don't have one of those shields on it.
When I went to college, there was a kid on campus that had one of those e-bikes, like the very first e-bikes.
Yeah.
And I saw him one day without the shield on the back, and his jacket was just soaked. Oh. The next day I saw him, he had the little fender.
It's like parting the Red Sea on the sidewalk.
The fender's huge. So I ride my bike in the rain. I had one of those things where my brain went to playing a video game that has 10 side missions and having to do 10 things at once because I had to do this yesterday. So my truck is getting work done. My truck's at Z-Bart, getting a new tonneau cover. And my wife's downtown, and she calls me and says, I have a flat tire. All right. So she has a flat tire, and we have things we need to do. The kids are at my mother-in-law. We're going to get the kids. We're supposed to go away on a trip soon. We have a flat tire. I don't have a car. What am I going to do? So I ride my bike in the rain to my mother-in-law's, get my mother-in-law's car, go down to where the flat tire is with my wife, meet them there, meet AAA, get the tire changed, take the car to the car place. All this happening all in the rain, nonstop in the rain. And everything was fine. It ends up being a little case of when bad luck is good luck, where simply if someone said, like, I got a flat tire, you'd say, like, oh, that's bad luck. Like, oh, sorry about that. Sorry that happened, right? We were supposed to drive across the state today. So the tire going the day before a big trip, I think, is good luck. Thank you.
100%.
For not blowing out today on the thruway in, you know, I mean, which exit do I want to pick here? 45, you know, exit. If it had blown out in one of those Rochester 17-mile stretches between exits, like, thank you for not doing that. It blew out instead just in downtown Buffalo and got the tire changed. So
that was always my biggest fear.
Blowing out a tire?
In my, like, big cross-country drives down to, like, Albuquerque or Des Moines when I was playing hockey.
Oh, in the middle of nowhere?
Oh.
Yeah.
There were some stretches going down to New Mexico where you're driving through, like, New Mexico itself, barren. There's nothing. It's just desert for as far as you can see. And I drove this old, like, a Nissan Pathfinder that was a monster. It never had a single problem. But yeah. Every morning waking up in whatever motel I stayed in on the way, I was just, please, please do not blow a gasket or blow a tire off, and I'll have to change this tire in the middle of Lincoln, Nebraska.
So
crazy.
One of the longest drives, I have a cousin that lives in Melbourne, and yes, that's how you say it, Australia. Melbourne, not Melbourne, but Melbourne. I say it that way because he lives there. That's what they say. You can drive across Australia from Melbourne to Perth. Perth's on the west coast. And it's a 36-hour drive. You think there's nothing in the middle of the U.S., like you're driving to Albuquerque, you're in the middle of nowhere. Australia, you need to bring extra gas because there are maybe enough gas stations along the way, but you really could be in trouble. Like, more trouble than anywhere here.
You're going to get got by dingoes.
Who knows?
Kangaroos and all kinds of junk out there.
Who knows? One of the places I think about driving where you're like, wow, this is a pretty intense atmosphere. Driving from L.A. to Vegas in the summer, there are signs up that say, like, if your car starts to overheat, you know, to open up the vents and turn the heat on in your car. Or just let the vent, let it vent out the engine heat to you. When it's 100 degrees to begin with, or else your engine will overheat and your car will stall out and it'd be bad.
Almost happened to my college roommates in Death Valley.
Really?
They went to Death Valley like before our senior year, and like they came back, we all like moved back in. I was like, oh, like, how was your guys' trip? They were like, oh, we almost died. Like, there was one day they were just driving along and their car just quit, and they had to just wait there for somebody to drive by. It took them 2 hours to wait for someone to
drive
by.
To see a person?
Yeah. And then it took them like 5 more hours to wait for the tow truck, and they didn't have cell service. So like they were just kind of stuck there. And eventually the sun went down, so it kind of cooled down a little bit. But cool in Death Valley is like 80 degrees.
Yeah.
So it's pretty scary.
There's some gnarly, like, I driving through Colorado in the first leg of that New Mexico trip, the mountains up there with no guardrails and little two-lane roads.
Yeah.
That is no joke. Like, hey, you have an 8-hour day of driving, and like that's your last hour. Whew.
Yeah. I always like driving through, like, out in the Southwest, you're driving down this secondary highway, not exactly an interstate, and there'll just be a driveway that goes off it up into the, you know, into the hill, into the bush, and you're thinking, like, I wonder where that goes. Wonder what's at the end of that.
It's like a 45 degree.
You're not going to find out. I don't know. It's just a dirt road, just like a house. I don't know.
Some True Detective stuff.
Right, right. I'm not going to find out. Anyway. So, yeah, we're traveling a little bit today. Do some Boston tour. I've been to Boston in a while. So, going to Boston, seeing some family. The weather there, I check the weather for tomorrow. Because tomorrow is the national. So, tomorrow 4:30 is the Bandits NLL Finals. Tomorrow, I guess it's a lacrosse fan's dream. You've got the actual college finals at 12 and 2:30. Syracuse plays Maryland at 2:30, and then the Bandits play. And check the weather for that game because it's at Gillette, and we gave some talk to some consideration to going. Would you be surprised? Would you be embarrassed for me if I said to you that I went to Syracuse for 4 years, and when the Syracuse lacrosse team gets into the Final Four all the time, when they do, you know, somewhat regularly or win titles, I watch those games. Would you be embarrassed for me or shocked to find out that when I was at Syracuse for 4 years, I never went to a single lacrosse game? I did not go to one.
I mean, it's a busy time of year.
Spring?
Yeah.
Maybe.
You never know what you're doing. There's other stuff going on. You got, you know.
I feel like I probably should have gone to a couple lacrosse games. Yeah, maybe. Probably. I never did. I went to basketball. I went to football. I never went to a lacrosse game.
Make up for it this weekend.
I might. I'm talking about it. Although that means going to Gillette. I have not seen a game at Gillette. I've been to Gillette and gone through like the Patriots Hall of Fame. I had time to burn there with one of my college roommates once, so walked around Patriot Place, did all that kind of stuff. Anyway, 803-0550, our phone number. When we return, Gene Battaglia on the Amherst, who are playing for their season tonight. He tweeted out a little bit ago, a couple weeks ago, hey, Buffalo, enjoy.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Wait, Devin Levi, he's ready. So I wanted to follow up with him on that. The idea that Levi is fully cooked, fully done here. He's not at a great series, but that Levi should be ready to come to the Buffalo Sabres. We'll get Gene Battaglia's thoughts on that when we return. It's coming up here on WGR. Purple Rain. Again, evidence of the sun existing. To the Western Hotline, Gene Battaglia. Gino, is it raining in Rochester like it is here?
It's miserable. I'm looking at my yard. It's overgrown. It's a jungle. It's, no golf this weekend. How are you, Jeremy?
I'm all right. I'm getting out of this area. I'm playing golf next week. I've got scheduled golf. Gene Battaglia, co-host the Sports Bar 3-6, the Fan Rochester, Danger Battaglia, joining us here to chat about the Amherst, who are up against it, huh? Last gasp against Laval here.
Yeah, this is going into this, and I have a problem with the American Hockey League, this format. If it's a developmental league and it's the divisional final, why are we playing a best of five? So, like, if the Amherst were down, say, 3-2, I think it would feel a little bit different than, oh gosh, they only have one win in this series so far, and they're facing elimination tonight. But if you're going to ask me what needs to happen for Rochester, it's just very simple. Devin Levi needs to show his ability tonight. If he does that, I like their chances.
So he's not had a great series in this series against Laval?
No. Both the first two games were just up and down, particularly game two. But you go back to game three where 15 seconds in, okay, there's a deflection in front. Team wasn't ready, but I mean, the defense tightened up after that for the Amherst. You go to the third, only down 1-0, and Rushek gets the tying goal. You're thinking, all right, now you like your chances here on the road, a 1-1 game. And just 2 minutes later, Florian Jacquet now gets around the corner, but it's a backhand that goes over his shoulder. I think that's one Levi has to come up with. And for the Amherst only to give up 5 shots in the third period, part of that third period of tie game, give up 3 goals on 5 shots, Jeremy, it's not a good look.
You know, Gene, one of the reasons I wanted to get you was a couple weeks ago, you tweeted, enjoy him, Buffalo. Levi is ready. And I wouldn't anticipate you're backing off that based on a bad series, right? Are you past the point where you feel like evaluating Levi game to game, week to week, month to month is worth it? You think he's shown that he's ready and he should be up here next year with the Sabres?
Yeah, it's is this the freezing cold takes segment of your show?
No. I'm trusting that like you probably still feel that way, or at least you got to that point.
Well, it's from the standpoint of, okay, he goes out here against Laval, and let's just kind of point this out first. Laval, best team. This isn't the President's Trophy or whatever in the NHL where they always lose. Laval was the best team, and they have reinforcements from Montreal, and they have Caden Primo on the other side. So if it ends here, there's no shame, I guess, in losing. But that being said, what more does Devon Levi need to prove here in Rochester? Now, if they go out, the Sabres do, and sign a veteran goalie or whoever it may be, and Levi, you know, starts the season here in Rochester, you know, that's fine. But the way he played this year and the way he dominated in that Syracuse series, I'm just saying, like, will he go up and be that guy for the Sabres? I don't know. Maybe I'm making a jump there. But there's nothing left for him to prove here in Rochester.
Yeah, I mean, a bunch of shutouts, save percentage is good. He's, you know, he took that assignment. Initially, he signs out of college and comes here and plays really well. And, you know, Gene, maybe it was a case of heightened expectations, got a little out of control off of seven games. But he goes to Rochester, and to me, I don't know. I feel like there have been a couple players that have done this, that have gone down there and then proven it. And they don't always find their way back up. For whatever reason, the Sabres, I don't know, to my eye, feel a little bit reluctant to call some of these guys up.
Yeah, I mean, if I can take a detour here, I just think that the Sabres blew the whole timeline of UPL, where, you know, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen performing well, this is going back 2 years, and he's on the clear day roster, meaning, hey, you can come back down to Rochester. And, you know, he's played enough games up here in Buffalo. He's earned the right. And we're all thinking, really? He's never played in a professional playoff game. Why not give him the experience? That's the year we had Malcolm Subban. And actually, the Amherst went to the conference final that year, losing to Hershey. But, you know, would that have helped UPL? I don't know in the end. How could it have hurt? But where we are now, I'm like, okay, was that a misstep? What they did this year, I'm like, yes, bring down Cooley. Don't let him go to the world. Bring down these guys. Let them get, you know, the experience, what it is to play, you know, in meaningful hockey here. So to answer your question, yeah, sometimes these timelines here for the Sabres at goaltender or other positions, they don't work out all the best.
Yeah. Well, best of luck to the Amherst tonight, and we'll see you at training camp. I'm sure Hard Knocks will be looking for us, you know, you and I both, to be the next stars of HBO's Hard Knocks, potentially. You know, maybe not.
Well, we joke on our show. You're going over to Oak Hill, Jeremy. You're going to be playing with Bean there. You're going to make nice. You know, they're going to be following you. Like, how's your golf shot going to be when the camera's going
to
be?
I'm more likely to be the guy whose face is in the locker room with a dartboard on it for the receiver room. Come on, even though I like a lot of their receivers, I think some of them are pretty good. I just, you know, want them to have a few more and, you know, keep them young and cheap. Anyway, thanks, Gene.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Gene Battaglia of Danger Battaglia. They're on 3 to 6 on the sports bar at our sister station in Rochester. We see them every year at training camp. They're out there under the pavilion with us. 803-0550, our phone number, and 1-888-552-550. Trying to think what I want to get to here. Brendan Shanahan, anybody? Josh is here. Get on the air and tell me why no.
Listen.
So let's just backstory. Brendan Shanahan out with the Leafs. The reports are he's being courted by the Islanders. Here are the Sabres looking for someone, senior advisor, or, you know, I don't care, just like taking the job. Brendan Shanahan, yes, sold, done.
I'm in.
Done.
How long?
Forever.
See, that's where you lose me. Name
him the Shanahans for all I care.
I'm okay with a short-term idea, but long-term, what did he do in Toronto?
Bill's a winner.
Long term.
I gotta be honest here about what's going on in Toronto. Any Sabres fan that throws that much shade at Toronto is, listen, I love you all. You're a joke. You are flat out walking into the room as a stinky person saying, like, oh man, you stink. I don't even understand it. I get liking to laugh at Leafs fans for their pain. They have a legitimately good franchise that has endless amounts of good things going on, but they lost in the seventh game of the playoffs to Florida. Sorry. The playoff format has screwed the Leafs over to a large degree for like 10 years, and Sabres fans who have never even participated in this format are throwing shade. What has he done? How do I answer that?
Look at what he left them with, right? Marner might leave. Matthews' contract is huge, which is deserved, but it's a big contract. Tavares, what's going to happen with him? Like, their whole core is falling apart right now.
Falling apart! They finished first in the East!
I get that, but what's next? What's the long-term plan for them now that they're moving forward? What's their next plan?
I think Shanahan's biggest mistake in his time in Toronto was getting too addicted to having those four specific players. Not because they can't win, because they built up a history and a mentality, and it became a mental thing with the players. I think the team was really good.
Yeah.
Almost every year.
If Stolarz didn't get hurt, I think they'd still be playing right now.
Might be.
But my main point is yes, I would like him short term, because obviously I'd rather have the problem Toronto is having than what the problem we're having is. But at the same time, I don't want to be in 6-7 years being like, okay, well, we're going to lose six guys here. Which ones are we going to keep?
Well, first off, they're not going to lose six guys. They're going to lose maybe two. And one of those guys, they're probably happy that he's going to leave, because it makes it easy. They don't have to trade him.
Right.
And Marner. Let me tell you right now, in 6 years, I would love to have six consecutive second-round exits. That's fair. Sign up for that?
And the Marner thing, I think, is so hyper-specific to that market with that player. I don't think he necessarily did much wrong other than handing the negotiations over to Kyle Dubas when he was still so young and had to make those deals happen with top-of-the-line players. And Marner, I think it's a combination of Toronto is tough to play in. I think the story that it's the fans' fault up there that's going around is crazy. But I do think it's a high-pressure situation up there. And I don't know that Marner's the best guy to be in that kind of a situation. Shanahan should have noticed that, and I think he probably did notice that. But his belief was, these guys are so good, they can overcome that. And that's the bet he made. And I would ride with a guy that makes a bet like that.
It's funny, like, as this series goes along, let me look at the Leafs-Panthers series, because part of the story is, of course, 6-1 in the final. Like, the Panthers really hit their stride. If you just swapped out one of the games for another game. And I mean, did Florida win one of those game three close? Swap game three and game seven. And now it's, well, the Leafs lost by like a goal.
Right.
You're writing all these narratives based on that. Like, they had a 2-0 lead in the series. They did lose their starting goaltender.
I think the problems come when it's just repeated as many times as it has been for Toronto with them. Like, that one performance, you don't want to make sort of generalizations based on one game, but the sample size of that one game being how they perform at the end of the year every year is where the frustration comes with them. I think it's more of a consistent year-on-year thing where the final game of the year where they need to come show up and play, they never do. So I think it's, you want to be careful with running around with, they lost one game 6-1, everyone's freaking out about this one game. I think it's the accumulation of all of those years of that one game happening over and over again.
Yep. It's enough to make you go nuts.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, maybe you guys have talked me back. I'm sorry. Listen,
you're entitled to your opinion.
Yeah. No, I just...
That's how this works. You're allowed to have an opinion, and people are allowed to yell at you about it. That's how this station works. Whether you're a GM or a host, you're allowed to yell at other people. You are. I'm not being snarky there. You could... That's how this is supposed to work.
I guess I'm just, I don't know. I'm nervous of the when we're going to hit that next wall, but we haven't even got to that wall yet, so I'm not even going to worry about it.
And I also think there's something to be said for, he did that job for 11 years in one market. What can he learn from those 11 years in Toronto? Like, he doesn't have to be the exact same president/GM that he would be, you know, here in Buffalo, like we're talking about. He doesn't have to make those same decisions in the same manner that he made them in Toronto. A lot of head coaches in the NHL fail at their first stop, their second stop's where they have success.
Yep.
And I think it might be worth it to bet on that with Shanahan, because he's a smart, accomplished, well-renowned executive.
What if I were to go ahead, keep going.
I just think that if you want to bet on him learning something from Toronto, you could end up with like the best guy in the league. He's really good.
Package deal. What if this whole time Marner and Shanahan have been tight? And Shanahan is...
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Marner's number one guy. Do them both.
Right. I think that's maybe what we're going to see from the Islanders.
Oh, God. And the number one pick? One good time.
Yeah, right.
Cool. Good time.
Michael Miso.
Having a good time. Extendo Sports coming up. It's worth mentioning, every day that goes longer without the Sabres adding this senior advisor that they reportedly want to add is less time for that senior advisor to be a part of the offseason that they have. The offseason is underway for them, and there's not a senior advisor yet. If they wait another month, is that guy coming after the draft? After the meetings about the draft? After meetings with discussing with other teams if you want to make a trade or the Byram trade? By the way, look for the Rangers on the Byram trade. Look for the Rangers. 803-0550. They've been after him, apparently. 1-888-550-2550. Extendo Sports, and then sales up with the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550. 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
All right. Extendo Sports. Is Sal dialed up yet? All right, Sal. He'll remember this. I like having Sal on for this because every once in a while, Sal, you know, I'll be driving around and I'll write down, as the old guy on the morning show now, like I'm the old guy, Joe's a little younger, Owen and Josh.
Yeah.
And I love thinking of something and writing down, I got to tell the guys about this because they have no idea about this. And you will. You ready? McDonald's.
Because I'm old too. Let's go.
McDonald's Monopoly.
It was huge.
Yes. You would go to McDonald's, guys, back in the day when your grandparents here used to hang out when we were kids. You'd go to McDonald's, and other fast food chains had their own version of this, but on the fries and on the drink would be, you tear them down, kind of like roll up the rim to win.
I remember this.
I was going to say.
They brought this back recently.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Okay. Back in the day, it was big.
But... Did you know, wasn't the documentary about this where the guy like cheated and all that? It was unbelievable.
Yes, it was on what?
You got to go watch this. It's called McMillions.
That's right. I have seen this. I wasn't sure if you guys would remember McDonald's Monopoly, which was like a way of life when I was 12. You know,
McMillions, I'm reading here. It says it was the McDonald's Monopoly game between 1989 and 2001. So, Jeremy, that's right. Like in the 90s when we were growing up, this was the game, because this particular documentary, and I don't want to shift it to being about that, but it focuses on when this happened, and the guy basically, somebody was helping somebody win millions of dollars, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe I'm only remembering it because of the documentary.
Okay. That's how you remember it? That's how you're introduced to it?
Oh, the promotion has used other names. It was brought back in different forms.
Okay.
Recently.
Very good. What's coming up, Sal? What do you got going on today?
I have another one for you, though. But in 1984, if I remember, it was 84 in L.A., the Olympics, and McDonald's had a big thing with the Olympics and a giveaway, and that was a huge deal that summer, like as a kid, going to McDonald's, and you'd get stuff, and the Olympics, if the United States won this or won that, and that was a really big deal in how they matched up. Hmm. All right, so today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, first of all, I was listening to your question earlier, who's the most important bill? I like that. It was really interesting.
Yeah, that's not Josh Allen.
I was thinking about it in my head, and every time I thought of someone, I'd say, nah, he's not as important as this guy. But you know what? I don't know. So I think I settled on, I don't know if this is kind of cheating or not, but whoever wins the CB2 job.
Yeah.
I think that's who I'm going to guess.
Okay.
Whether that's Maxwell Harrison or Tre'Davious White or whoever else.
I appreciated Harrison. The Bills put out a video of all their rookies trying wings with blue cheese instead of ranch. And if you didn't see it, it's pretty funny. Harrison is the star of the show because he takes a, you know, blue cheese, puts it on the wing, and while this is like cliche stuff for Buffalo, like I like it. I think it's kind of funny. Some of the guys were not vibing with the blue cheese. Harrison takes a bite and he goes, says something to the effect of, the tastes complement each other well. And someone off camera laughs and he goes, what are you laughing at me for? I guess they weren't expecting Harrison to give this, you know,
right.
this full on, like, oh, yeah, this
real,
is
real, that's right.
Actual evaluation. He liked it. He liked it. Right. Jackson Hawes, I thought he was funny too. He took one bite. He's like, I'm down with it. And Landon Jackson, he was the other one who Jackson. Said, he basically said, people are going to look at me funny if I get ranch. And they're like, yeah. He's like, all right, looks like I guess I'm getting blue cheese from now on. So I thought it was.
They kind of know now. Right?
Yeah.
They were told.
I thought it was a funny thing. Like, it'll grow on you if you don't do it that way. So, anyway.
Anyway, real quick, I want to talk the whole playoff seeding thing. The CFP did their new playoff seeding. I want to talk a little bit about that today. Bills, lots on the table. It's a Friday, right? We talk about a lot of different things. Of course, the Bandits have their championship, you know, final coming up. No matter what, it's game three tomorrow night. John Gertler, play-by-play man of the Bandits, going to join me at 11:30.
Yep.
Before that, at 11 a.m., Carlo Coliacovo, our guy up in Toronto, TSN Toronto. We're going to talk lease. Brendan Shanahan now on the market, and Mitch Marner, what the future is with him. That'll be really interesting at 11 with Carlo. And then at 10:30, though, even before that, we've got a great guest panel today. Eric Wood today on what Hard Knocks would be like as a player, what he would think of it, and obviously the Bills overall. And Eric is playing in Josh Allen's 117 holes of golf coming up next Tuesday. I am honored to be the MC once again for this great event to raise a lot of money for the Patricia Allen Fund and the Oshai Children's Hospital. And Eric will be playing on Tuesday, 117 holes.
Very good. Make sure you get Carlo on the NHL playoff format, because he's been tweeting about that. As it's part of why the Leafs are stuck. They are stuck in the wrong format. But it's not all that. It's some of it. All right, Sal, you're in for me next week, too, because I'm on vacation. So I'll see everybody when we return.
I'll be in there. Yep, you got it. Have a great vacation. Be safe.
Thanks, buddy.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.